This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
Today, zoology and entomology meet the classical guitar. We'll hear from a 17-year-old who's been kissed on the cheek by Jane Goodall and has a job at a research lab painting ants. Yes, painting ants. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. We're at Centennial Hall at the University of Arizona in Tucson, where we'll also hear a 14-year-old pianist play Prokofiev and an 11-year-old violinist play Debussy. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Here's our host, the great concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome, everybody. We're so grateful to UA Presents, the performing arts presenter at the University of Arizona, Tucson, for bringing us here. We're in Tucson at a very special time of the year. The largest gem and mineral show in the world is just winding down to make way for the Fiesta de los Vaqueros, Rodeo Week, with the Rodeo Parade and the Tucson Rodeo, which brings thousands of cowboys and horses to town. We've been doing our own kind of wrangling here in Tucson, rustling up two terrific local classical musicians, the 14-year-old pianist and the zoology-obsessed guitarist Joanne mentioned. But let's start with an amazing 11-year-old violinist who's from a place where they don't know from saguaros or prickly pears. She comes from New York City. Please welcome Ellie Choi. Ellie, welcome. Tell everyone what we're going to play together.
We are going to play the first movement of Debussy's Violin Sonata in G minor.
When you're ready, we'll take it from the top. Thank you. Ellie Choi, 11-year-old violinist from New York City, performing the first movement of Claude Debussy's last composition, the Sonata for Violin and Piano in G minor. Ellie is one of our Jack Kent-picked young artists. Well, I'm glad we waited for that, Ellie. We have not played that on the show ever, so clearly we were waiting for you to be born and play that beautiful Debussy as beautifully as you did. So
thank you.
Thank you. It's good to plan ahead, isn't it? Ellie, there's a Korean tradition for children that may have influenced your decision to pick up the violin. It happens when you're 1 year old. What happens?
Yeah, for your one-year-old birthday, Korean parents, they set out objects that kind of reflect the child's future. It's like a thread, because a thread is very long. It's for a long life. And rice is for being rich. And a piano is for being a pianist. And my mom, she was a pianist herself. I think that's why she put a piano there. There was also a violin and a pencil for an author and all those kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I picked up the violin. So I think that kind of reflected how I was going to be in the future, and I really enjoy it.
Well, I'm glad you do. We certainly do. Now, you moved with your mom from your hometown of San Diego to New York to study at the Juilliard Pre-College Division. Tell the story about the strange performance experience you had that could only happen to someone your age.
Since they have baby teeth and they have to grow into new teeth, big teeth. And that time, one of my molars were really wiggly in the morning. I went to the dentist a few days ago, and he wanted me to take it out, but I really didn't, because I have really bad experiences with dentists pulling my teeth out. I don't like that.
No.
And so I was just waiting for it to fall out. And then the day of the performance, in Juilliard, almost every other week, you have a kind of a mini recital with your classmates and your studio teacher, and you just kind of play if you think you're ready. And that day, my teeth, like the molar, was kind of like, it was about to fall out. But I just kept it in because I wanted to take it out maybe later or somewhere when it was less risky. But for the performance, I was playing Viettong number 5 and the first movement, and it was kind of acrobatic, and there's lots of fast parts.
Very intense.
Yeah, and in the fast parts, I clenched my teeth, and it fell out. It was, like, in my mouth, and then it was about into the end. And then I could feel blood. It was kind of going with the pulse of my music. And then in the end, it fell out, and then everybody started laughing.
Oh, my gosh. I'll never listen to Viettong Fifth the same way ever again. Sort of the Tarantino Viettong concerto there. You've had amazing performance opportunities all over the world, Ellie. You've played in Austria, in Prague, and even in Dubai. What was that like, playing in Dubai?
In Dubai, I played Paganini Concerto No. 1. But for that day that I played at the tallest building in the world, it's, like, really tall.
What's it called again?
It's called Burj Khalifa.
Burj Khalifa, again.
I think now called Burj Dubai.
Okay.
But it's just really big and really tall. And the elevators were really fast. So
my ears started popping.
And everything.
Wow.
And then the conductor, he managed to take a little string orchestra and, like, kind of arrange a spot in the sightseeing area. And the string orchestra...
At the top floor.
Yeah, at the top floor. And the string orchestra played, I played, and then finally we had time to see it. Like, we didn't even see it. We were just starting to play. And so there's this special place in the observation deck where you can touch the clouds, quote-unquote.
Because you're above the clouds at that point.
Yeah. But I was really disappointed because clouds aren't those puffy white things you see from the ground. They're just water vapor.
They're not made of cotton?
No.
Oh. I'm so disappointed. Gosh, that's an experience none of us have had. I know your mom travels with you. She's a musician too, right?
Yeah, she studied piano in Berlin for 13 years, and I think she really enjoys it. She plays with me sometimes, but recently I've been playing with other pianists, and yeah.
Well, I know you're very, very close to her. What is your absolute favorite thing about your mom?
I love how she smells. Lots of people like how their mom smells, but I just like the natural aura of her, and I think it's really lovely.
I think that's great. I think you probably have a good deal to do with how she smells so great. I think you've got sort of the same biology there, Ellie, and I think your aura and her aura have intermingled, and all of our auras are the richer for it.
Thank you.
All the best to you, Ellie. Ellie Choi, 11 years old, our violinist from New York City.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our next young performer is also a Jack Kent Cook young artist. He's an outstanding 16-year-old trumpet player studying at the Interlochen Arts Academy in Michigan. His name is Elmer Churampi Mucha. Elmer, tell everyone where home is.
I'm from Lima, Peru.
And so there you are studying in the Michigan winter. You must miss Lima's weather as well as your family.
Yeah, I miss home so much.
Well, to help ease your feelings of homesickness, we wanted to let your parents listen in on your performance today. So we've got your mom and dad on the line from the Republic of Peru. Say hello to them.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, ma.
Sí, acá esperando el momento en que tú te presentes a tocar ahí, papi.
Sí, aquí estoy en la radio, acá hay mucha gente.
Entonces, what's mom say?
Para mí también es una emoción muy grande que estés ahí.
Okay. She said, I cannot wait to hear you.
Okay, Dora and Elmer Sr., you all sit back and listen. And Elmer Jr., please introduce this terrific arrangement we're going to play together.
I will play Rhapsody in Blue by Gershwin.
Elmer Chirampi Mucha, 16-year-old trumpet player from Lima, Peru, now studying with Ken Larson at the Interlochen Arts Academy in Michigan, playing George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, arranged for trumpet and piano. Elmer's parents have been listening in from Lima, Peru. Elmer asked them what they thought.
Hello, mamá.
Hello, hijo.
¿Qué te pareció? Dice.
Me pareció muy increíble, hijo, y estoy muy alegre, muy contenta por todos los logros, hijo.
Oh, she said she really liked it, and she thought it was incredible. Yeah.
Now say goodbye to mom and dad for us.
Bueno, mamá, me tengo que ir. Hello? Bye bye.
Elmer, I know your father is a trumpet player too, a salsa player. Did he get you started on the trumpet?
Yeah, when I was 4, I took his trumpet when he was going to take a break. And I just played it for fun, and I got a good sound. I remember I played a C. This one. No, yeah. And
You picked it up at 4 years. I mean, so in other words, he didn't get you started.
I just took it, yes. I don't know why.
Wow.
And from that day, he told me that I was going to be a trumpet player, and he started teaching me from that day.
I think he's right. And you became a fantastic player very quickly. You won first place in auditions to attend the National Conservatory of Peru. And then, as soon as you arrived at Interlochen, you won first chair there. But I know you had a lot of help along the way. For example, you were given your first concert instrument by a soccer star in your home country. How did that come about?
Oh, this famous soccer player, his name is Norberto Solano. He used to be the captain of the professional soccer team from Peru. And so I was trying to find help for my flight tickets to study in the United States and to find new trumpets. So the TB people helped me to find this famous soccer player, and he promised me that he was going to give me. So he gave me the flight tickets and these new trumpets. So it was fantastic, and I still remember him like as a good friend. Yeah.
Very moving. And I know many others have helped you along the way, but you've helped your sister out back in Lima. How do you help your sister?
Yeah, her name is Camila. She's 5 years old now. She was born with some problems in her lips. And in Peru, when I go there every summer, I need to make gigs playing weddings so I can support my family paying her therapies. So I need to help my family to pay my sister's school. So I started working as a trumpet player there when I was 14, maybe. So because I have a family very humble and poor. So I want to change this in the future, but for now I'm doing gigs in Peru, helping them, supporting them.
Well, my gosh, you know, some of us would be saving our money for an Xbox or something.
Right,
and there
yeah.
you are helping with your sister's medical bills and therapy.
Right.
Gosh, you're to be heartily blessed, Elmarie, and you're clearly blessed with a wonderful family and a great gift. We're
Thank
very
you.
Privileged to have had you on the show.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
And
Thank
all
you.
The best to you.
Thank you.
Elmer Chirampi Mucha, 16 years old, our trumpet player from Lima, Peru, now studying at the Interlochen Arts Academy in Michigan. Our first local performer of the day joins us now. Please welcome from here in Tucson, 17-year-old guitarist Augustus Woodrow Tomizuka. Augustus, may I call you Gus?
Sure thing, Chris.
Very good. Tell everybody about this piece you're going to perform.
This piece is the Grand Overture by Mauro Giuliani, Opus 61 for guitar, and I absolutely love it, and I hope you do too. Thank you.
Augustus Woodrow Tomizuka, 17-year-old guitarist from here in Tucson, performing Grand Overture by Mauro Giuliani. Gus, I heard the overture, but I heard the whole opera. I've never heard such a grand evocation on the classical guitar. I mean, I heard the basso profundo and the basso buffo and the Heldon tenor and everything. I mean,
I'm glad you got it too.
Just, oh God, the differentiation of voices is just extraordinary.
Thank you.
The character
Thank you.
That you bring to it and really just had us all enthralled.
I try.
You do very, very well. Gus, you say that Tucson here is the epicenter for classical guitar.
Absolutely, without a doubt. I think Tucson, because we're kind of the gateway to South America, we have a huge Latin influence, and because of all this cultural diversity, we get a lot of people here, as I'm sure a lot of the people in this audience are tonight, who are really into Latin American culture, and as you know, guitar is a huge part of that culture. So people who come here, guitar just goes over really well in the local community. And as a result, we have a fantastic program at the University of Arizona headed by Tom Patterson. We have people like David Russell and the Assad brothers who come here every year. It's really fantastic. Best place to study.
So you've got to work with all kinds of people and hear all kinds of people in your...
Yeah, life. Yeah. The audition tape I actually sent in was from a masterclass with Odair Assad, which was crazy.
It's true that you're an outstanding musician, but tell everybody... You've got a real passion for something else.
Yeah, I'm really into conservation and zoology and natural history. That's my other side.
Well, I wanted to learn more about your other side, so I asked you to take me to a lab where you have an internship. We're at the Dornhaus Social Insect Lab at the University of Arizona, and Gus, what the heck are you doing?
So I'm sitting here painting ants. So what we do, we mark ants individually with different color codes. Using paints that are actually designed for race cars. And this allows us to go into a colony and identify individuals specifically and kind of track their movements over a long period of time. So right here I have a worker, and she's running really fast, and this is kind of the most skilled portion.
Oh, you got
there
her.
There you go, yeah.
You got her. And now you're putting her on ice. I was hoping that was for chilled tequila shots later. But no, is that to slow her down?
Yeah, exactly.
I used to read a lot of sociobiology, Conrad
really?
Lorenz. Conrad Lorenz on aggression and King Solomon's Ring.
Huh.
And so, of course, that was all about insects and other species in sort of mass mentality. And now here we are getting into the individuality of ants. Is that something new?
Yeah, actually, interestingly, it's kind of at the same time as we're getting more interested in studying ants as individuals, we're also really, the scientific community as a whole is still really interested in studying what we call the superorganism, so mm-hmm. kind of the colony mm-hmm. as a whole and how that behaves. So I don't know, there are kind of the two aspects of studying social insects mm-hmm. that both come into play, really. Mm-hmm. And this actually, it's interesting because people didn't used to think that individual ants would behave very differently, but our research so far, which is was started by Dr. Scott Powell, who's an incredible mentor.
He's your mentor here.
Yeah, an ant researcher. Our research is really aimed at identifying maybe behavioral differences between individuals within a colony, which was previously not really thought of too much. I mean, we do a mm-hmm. lot of other things too, but that's one of the goals.
Gus, this internship at the insect lab is just one of the things you've been doing with animals. You're a volunteer at the zoo also, yes?
Yeah, that's right. I've been a volunteer at the zoo since just before my freshman year of high school.
So so what do you do there? Do you give tours? Do you educate? What do you do?
I help out on some tours. Education is the primary part. I'm also certified to handle smaller education animals, but... you know, I'm good with insects, not so much with larger animals. You know, I don't know.
I think you're a little bit modest about your experience with large animals. Tell everybody about this amazing experience you had in the Arctic.
Yeah, so back in 2010, there's this organization called Polar Bears International, and the zoo that I volunteer at is what's called an Arctic ambassador, which means they're closely affiliated with Polar Bears International. So... Mm-hmm. Because of this, they got a slot for one of the teen volunteers to travel to Churchill, Manitoba, which is pretty much the number one polar bear viewing site in the world, and do some research and conservation. They hosted an essay competition to get the position, and I was actually too young at the time, so I wasn't going to do it, but my my mom, who's very strong-willed, influenced me to try, and they told me I got it, which was ridiculous.
That's fantastic.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it's a life-changing experience, because I liked polar bears before, but, you know, I had no idea how diverse they are as a species and their habitat is.
Explain to me how you got so close to a polar bear. You were in some sort of gondola, or what was it?
Yeah, you have to ride around on what are called tundra buggies, and they're like massive school buses on steroids, and these allow you to go out there and get right up close, and they have a back deck that's open. And some of the more curious bears will actually come up right up to the deck.
And you were about as close to one as you and I are right now?
Yeah, about that close. Yeah, and I mean, I did have the higher position, so I felt pretty much safe, but I mean... She breathed on me, and that's a really life-changing experience when you have a polar bear breathe on you.
Gus, tell the story of the donation you got to hand over to a very famous primatologist.
Yeah, so we were lucky enough at the zoo to have primatologist Jane Goodall, who a lot
of
people
gosh.
Are familiar with,
yeah,
come in, and at the end I was informed by Vivian Vampinen, who runs the Reed Park Zoo, that we had raised some money for the Jane Goodall organization, and she offered me the opportunity to present it to Jane Goodall, and, you know, of course it took me maybe one microsecond to determine that that would be a fantastic option. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so after she was done giving this lecture, some other team volunteers and I went up, and I handed her the check, and I don't want to quote how much it was, but it was substantial, and you know, I kind of shook her hand. I was like, it was really surreal. And then she kissed me on the cheek, and I always said, you know, I will never wash that cheek ever again.
Yeah. I'm so inspired by talking with you and watching you paint these ants. It's such a great experience. Thanks for bringing us to the lab. Totally fascinating.
No, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Gus, make sure you pass along our thanks to everyone at the lab for letting us come and visit and not let the bees out and stuff like that. I have one question for you. Do you ever sleep?
Quite a bit, actually. You'd be surprised.
I'm very surprised. Here you are, you know, mastering the animal kingdom, the insect world, and the guitar to such a degree. My gosh, my hat's off to you.
Thank you.
You're
so
such
much.
An inspiration. Great.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks, Gus. Augustus Woodrow Tomazuka, 17 years old, from here in Tucson, Arizona.
Being in the audience for a From the Top taping is an unforgettable experience. We tape our shows before live audiences all over the country, and this fall we'll be taping shows in Boston, Massachusetts, Stanford, California, and Charlotte, North Carolina. For tickets and information, go to fromthetop.org.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from Centennial Hall at the University of Arizona in Tucson. Coming up, a gifted 15-year-old cellist from the Chicago area performs the music of Alexander Glazunov. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Our show in Tucson is made possible by Shirley Chan and Wally Prowicki and Dr. Herschel and Jill Rosenzweig. Special thanks to Classical 90.5 and Arizona Public Media. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
The actor David Hyde Pierce became a household name when he played the role of Niles on the long-running TV series Frasier. But he's also a Tony Award-winning theater actor appearing on Broadway in musicals like Spamalot and Curtains. Currently, he's starring in the latest play by Christopher Durang, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. But what you may not know is that growing up, David was completely devoted to classical music. All through high school, he was planning on becoming a concert pianist. So when I found out he was a fan of our show, I decided to give him a call.
How did you start piano? You were actually a concert pianist in the making until you got into college. What age did you start, David?
I started playing when I was about 8 years old. And I can tell you that for exactly 1 year, I hated every second of it. And my mom and dad made me keep taking lessons. And then something clicked at the end of the first year. I discovered that I was a good sight reader. So what would happen is I'd be watching, say, on PBS, they'd have a silent movie playing. And there would be this music, piano music playing under the silent movie. And I would go to my piano teacher and I'd say, now what is this? And I'd play a little something. And it turned out to be Beethoven's Appassionata. And I said, oh, can I play that? And she didn't say, no, what are you, an idiot? She just said, sure.
Oh, that's great. So encouraging. So what sort of role does piano or classical music play in your life these days?
After I finished with Frasier, I came back to New York, where I had been for many years before that, doing theater, and I started doing musicals. And I discovered my experience as a musician, my experience playing with instrumentalists and vocalists, has led to my appreciation of acting as chamber music, as a kind of ensemble playing, which we certainly had on Frasier, which I have in this current play of Vanya and Sonia, and it's something that I always look for in a play or in a musical, that feeling of people with all these different voices all coming together to create one piece of music.
Brilliantly put. Thanks so much, David. Would you do us the honor of introducing the young pianist who's up next on the show?
Yes, absolutely. Now it gives me great pleasure to introduce from Tucson, Arizona, pianist Cameron Williams.
Great to have you on the show, Cameron. And for those of you who would like to check out my full conversation with David Hyde Pierce, please visit us at fromthetop.org. Cameron, how old are you?
I'm 14 years old.
And what are you going to play for us?
I'm going to be playing a piece by Prokofiev, Suggestion Diabolique, Opus 4, Number 4. Thank you.
Cameron Williams, 14-year-old pianist from here in Tucson, playing Sergei Prokofiev's Suggestion Diabolique. Cameron, you are clearly an evil child.
Thank you, that's a great compliment.
We'll have to rename you Damien or something. That was spectacular. Really great. Cameron, you have a great self-deprecating sense of humor, and in that vein, you describe yourself unabashedly as a bit of a nerd. Now, I know that you know that we celebrate nerds pretty much every week on our show, so I say bring it on. One thing about you that's nerdy, in addition to your wonderful bow tie, I might say, is you're an academic whiz kid. How many languages do you speak at your young age?
Well, I'm currently learning Russian. I speak English, German, and Mandarin. My German's fading a little as I learn more languages, and I'm in the process of learning Russian. Additionally, I took a year of Latin when I was in sixth grade.
And you're a science nerd, too. I hear you like physics best. Is that what you like most about science?
That's right. I am currently listening to some lectures on YouTube by a professor from MIT.
And you got a really cool Christmas present.
That's right. So when most kids, you know, were getting their new video game systems, I got a book by Newton, really old book, The Principia, Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy. It's super tough to read.
If it's tough for you to read, Cameron, I'm totally cowed. I'm so glad that you freely embrace your nerdhood. But Cameron, wouldn't it be great to know just how nerdy you are?
Sure.
Good thing to know. You'd be willing to take a test, for instance?
Okay.
All right, Joanne?
I'm up for it.
Okay, here we go. Now, since you're a nerd and a pianist, isn't that redundant?
Hey.
You should be able to get this. Now, which of the following is clearly the coolest thing about the piano? A, that even though it's a percussion instrument, it's capable of the most profound melodic expression. B, that octaves on the modern piano are tuned slightly wider than a 2-to-1 harmonic ratio depending on the overtones of the strings involved based on their length and thickness, or C, that you can glimpse the human soul through a Shostakovich prelude.
I'm going to have to go with B.
B, obviously. The way octaves have to be stretched in order for the piano as a whole to sound in tune, especially at the lower and upper ends of the piano, way cool. But it's impossible to explain further if you're not a nerd, so you all have to go to Wikipedia for more information.
Okay.
But never look at the actual Wikipedia article. Always go to the citations, because they have the best info.
Right you are.
Okay, he's good. So that one was about thinking like a nerd, but do you know how to look like one? Which of the following is not a nerdy accessory? A, is it a pin that says, counting in binary is as easy as 1, 10, 11? B, a 40-gig thumb drive on a carabiner swinging from a belt loop? C, ear gauges? Or D, white New Balance tennis sneakers?
Those are some pretty heavy fashion accessories for a nerd, I gotta say.
The one thing I don't have is C, ear gauges.
Ear gauges, which is the correct answer.
Wow.
Which are, in case you don't know, those are those circular things you put in your earlobes to stretch them. The only gauge a nerd might sport would be a pressure gauge, I would imagine.
And the force down on your ear is mg.
That's right.
9.8 times the mass of the ear gauge.
Thank you, doctor.
He's measuring high on the nerd scale.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Let's see if you know a bit of nerd history now. The great mathematician and cosmologist Stephen Hawking is a hero to all nerds. Now, through his years of research, he's explained many of the universe's most mysterious phenomena. But which of the following phenomena does he find himself completely unable to explain? Is it A, the paradox that black holes somehow emit photons, neutrinos, and other subparticles? B, the meaninglessness of the concept that there is a beginning or end to our universe? Or C, women?
I think my strategy of going with, you know, how I sympathize worked last time. Mm-hmm. I don't have ear gauges, so I'm going to go with C.
Women. Yes, Hawking famously once said, women, they are a complete mystery. He's been divorced twice.
Wow, Chris, this boy ranks way higher on the nerd scale.
I think, look up nerd in the dictionary. It's got Cameron's picture in it. Congratulations, Cameron. In today's world, being a nerd is the new cool. Cameron Williams, 14 years old, from here in Tucson.
Sometimes kids send us the most wonderful material when they audition for our show, and Cameron is one of those kids. You can see his fantastic audition video at FromTheTop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to FromTheTop.org to learn more. Chris.
We don't often get the chance to hear the music of Alexander Glazunov, the Schumann of the steppes, as I think of him. But our final performer has brought us a beautiful piece of his to end the program. From Chicago, this is 15-year-old cellist Daniel Koller. Daniel, you're from the Chicago area, and you're the son of two major musical talents. Let's start with your dad. Tell everybody who he is.
My father is a triple gold medalist at three major national competitions, the Sibelius, Tchaikovsky, and Paganini. And he is a professor at DePaul University.
He has a name.
Violin. Oh, yeah, Ilya Koller.
Ilya Koller. And I've had the honor of playing chamber music with him, so give him my best when you see him next. And I know your mom is with you here. She's also a violinist, yes?
Yes, she's a great violinist, and she's an author of a string pedagogy book, which she's releasing this week, actually.
Oh, congratulations to her on that. I know we played together, too. She was in the Syracuse Symphony. We played Brahms Second together. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, gosh, it's so great to connect with you, finally. It didn't take you long to emerge from the shadow of your parents, however. You've already broken into the world of television. Which show?
America's Got Talent. I was a semifinalist.
Very good. And even though you didn't make the finals, I know they've still been using your footage, your very expressive visage, on some of their advertising, so good for you. You obviously made an impression. Even though you were on that flashy show, you've never been a kid who's played music simply to impress. What sorts of things motivate you when you perform? The connection between you and the audience, for instance.
I just really love to share music, and I feel music is a language which I was born to speak.
I think everyone will agree. You speak eloquently through this wistful piece. Please introduce it.
It's the Alexander Glazunov Minstrel Song.
Great way to end our show. I want to thank all of our great young performers, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week, and now Daniel will take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley and Tim Banker, with music producer Tom Vigneri. The tour producer is David Balsam, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with David Forbes and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. From the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. And from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.